Hello, fellow Debt Freedom Fighter. Thank you so much for listening today. Before we get started, I need to let you know that the interview segment of this episode was recorded in front of a live studio audience, so it's going to sound a little bit different. Also, a majority of this episode was recorded last week while the Rich Kids book giveaway was still going on, but it's my pleasure to say that it has ended today. I'm going to pull a winner at the very end of the episode. So if you enter to win Tom Corley's Rich Kids book, I'm pulling the name at the very end of the episode, even after the exit music is done, so stick around to the very end when I pull the winner. In the meantime, sit back, relax, and learn.
Hey, this is Jared Easley, the co-founder of the Podcast Movement and host of the Starve the Doubts podcast. You are listening to Steve Stewart on the Money Plan SOS podcast, helping everyday Americans pay attention and not interest.
Hey, everybody, it's Steve Stewart from the Money Plan SOS podcast, podcasting live from the Country Financial stage. Country Finance, actually Country is my insurance company, so I can easily get behind them. Country Finance podcast stage here at FinCon 14. And I have a very, 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 very interesting and special guest with me here today. His name is Anthony Sprav. He's the public relations director. Did I get that right? For FICO. So this is going to be really, really interesting. And as my listeners know, they're going to think that I'm going to rip you apart. But to be honest, I think they're going to be surprised at what we end up here with today. So, Anthony, how you doing?
I'm great. And I'm super excited to be here and having this conversation.
Let's talk a little bit about the conference that we're at today. This is FinCon, the Financial Blogger Conference. This is your third time here. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because financial bloggers are super important to the general consumer. And it's a way for us to get the right information about the FICO score out to people, which is what we want to do.
And that's what we're gonna hammer on here today.
Absolutely.
Together to make sure that we have a clear message to at least my audience and anybody who discovers this episode. Because to be honest, I have not heard FICO being interviewed on a podcast or radio show ever before. I don't know if that's ever happened
or not. I think this might be the first time.
Woo, we're breaking the rules.
We're
making history today. Okay, so tell us first of all, what is FICO?
So FICO is the company behind the FICO score. The FICO score, as many people know, is used by the vast majority of lenders as part of making a credit lending decision. The FICO score is a mathematical algorithm that is run against the data in a person's credit history, credit report, to generate a three-digit number that indicates their likelihood to repay a debt.
Yes.
Yes.
Very well done. Now, explain the relationship that FICO has with financial institutions that upload consumers' payment data, because that's where all this information is coming from. It's not coming from the individual.
Absolutely. So the way the process works, we create this algorithm, and we license that algorithm to the three credit bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. They pay us a licensing fee, and they use the algorithm to run against the data that they have collected from various lenders. So lenders report a consumer's payment history to the three credit bureaus, and that's the data that is used against the FICO score. So we don't have a direct relationship with the lenders in terms of how they report and what they report. We provide the algorithm that the bureaus use to generate the number from the data that they have.
I guess the question I really want to know is, how is it that FICO can capture the data from a credit card company, from a student loan, from a, you know, for bad medical debt?
That data is self-reported, essentially. It's reported by the lenders. So the lenders are reporting a consumer's payment history to the credit bureaus. So they're reporting on your credit cards, your mortgage, your auto loan, your student loan, all of those things. They're sending in a report once a month. Did you pay on time? That kind of data.
What is the advantage of them sending you that information? Not you, but as FICO. What is their advantage of sending the data in?
I think the advantage is that they're providing data to a system that they ultimately tap into in order to help them analyze future customers, potential customers, lenders. So they're providing data on their customers, in the hopes that everybody else is doing that, so that when they're evaluating a new customer, another lender has provided data on that customer that they can use in evaluating that customer.
So it's like crowdsourcing my payments to debts.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
All right. Now, how did FICO come about to determine what data is collected and how it could be used in creating a score?
So it's great that we're talking about this right now, because this is actually the 25th anniversary of the FICO score.
Happy
birthday.
Score.
Thank you. So the score has been around for 25 years. And it started because the founders of FICO, Bill Fair and Mr. Isaac, had done analysis on a variety of data to determine which data is predictive of someone's likelihood to repay a debt. So there was a lot of research that went into this at the beginning to see which data is valuable and which data isn't valuable. Data like your name, address, gender, sex, not useful. Data like how have you paid previous bills, very valuable. So the score really looks at your past behavior on how you've managed your credit as a pretty reliable predictor of your future behavior of how you're going to repay future debt. We all like to think we're super unique and we do things differently from everybody else, but the reality is mathematically we're pretty common and there are pretty consistent trends we can see based on past behavior as a predictor of future behavior.
Okay, all right. Now we talked a little bit ago about the three reporting agencies, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. What is the relationship between FICO and the three? Because you're not related. I mean, you're related in the same industry, but FICO's a publicly traded company, and that's what's 25 years old now, is when
right.
when it became a publicly traded company.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
And so what is the where are these other three entities coming from? And
so we're frenemies in the current vernacular in
okay.
terms of we sell or we license our mathematical algorithm to them to use, but they also create a credit score themselves and sell their credit score and try to market their credit score. So while they are selling and promoting the FICO score, they're also selling and promoting their own score. So we have a business relationship, but beyond that, nothing more.
I'm sure you know more about them than I do, so I want to go a little bit deeper into that. So what is their business? I mean, selling a credit score, I can go to myfico.com, and I've done this as a video on my website to show people how they could either get it for free through annual credit report or buy it from MyFICO. And when I do it, when I purchase it for $20, I think it was, from myfico.com, I'm offered two versions, TransUnion or, I can't remember.
Actually, now you can get all three.
So now I could purchase one of each
yep.
one. So what is the FICO score? Which one is it?
So there are multiple FICO scores. There are, at a minimum, you have three FICO scores, so one at each of the three bureaus. That's sort of the base score. And so which score your lender is using will depend on the relationship the lender has with the bureau. Different lenders use different bureaus, so they'll pull different FICO scores. The reality is the scores are all based on the same core algorithm, so though you may see different versions of the score, you're going to see a minimal difference between those different versions because they're all based on the same core mathematical algorithm.
This is really confusing to the consumer. So that's one of my beefs with the credit scoring
system.
That we've got three different numbers out there, and everyone's like, which one is it? And it's whatever the lender is using. That's what you're saying.
Right. It's whatever the... But I think taking a step back, there are basic behaviors that every consumer should undertake that will ensure that whichever score a lender pulls is going to be a good score. And those are paying your bills on time every time, keeping your balances on your credit cards below 30% of your available credit, and only opening new credit when you need it. If you are doing those three things every day, every month, every year, you will have a good score.
And that's going to be based on debt products. because we're talking about things that you sign up for a payment plan or with a credit card that you pay off every month. But then the only thing that affects the credit score would be bad debts. Because if I pay my cable bill every month, it doesn't affect my FICO score. If I pay my phone bill every month, my cell phone bill, it doesn't affect my credit score one bit unless I don't pay it. Do you feel there's an imbalance there?
Well, what we are realizing is that there is data like cell phone payment history, credit, cable payment history that can be a predictor of someone's financial responsibility and ability to repay a debt. We are actually right now in the process of looking at that data, analyzing it, and determining how predictive it is and how it could possibly be used to apply credit to people who don't use traditional credit products.
Let's jump ahead. I've got a whole script of questions I want to ask and get explanations for here, because we're going to talk about there are some big changes coming to FICO. It's called FICO 9.
Right.
And now the changes that I understand that are going to come through is that medical debt will either not be considered or not weighed as heavily, and that settled debts or ones that have been forgiven are also not.
So, what you're talking about are collections. Mm-hmm. So previously, any collection less than $100, any account that went into collection that was less than $100, the FICO score ignored. With the new version of the FICO score, FICO score 9, all collections that have been paid will be ignored by the score. So that's good news for consumers that have paid off anything that's gone on collections and are beginning to rebuild their financial house. It's important to remember, because the score will ignore, that doesn't automatically mean that your score is going to jump up, because your score is taking a hit as you've gone through the path to go into collections. So missing payments, not making payments, running up a high balance, all of those things have drawn the score down. So just because the score is going to overlook a collection doesn't mean that the score is immediately going to jump back up. Mm. What a consumer really needs to focus on is those good behaviors that are going to rebuild their score. As I mentioned earlier, paying all of their current bills on time every month, keeping their current open accounts below 20% or 30% rather of their available credit, and only opening new accounts when necessary. The beauty of the FICO score is the further in the rearview mirror that negative things get, the less impact they have on your score today. So there's a myth out there that, oh, if I've messed up and I've had a collection, or I've had a bad thing, I've missed a couple of payments, just throw up my hands, I'm screwed. That is absolutely not true. You can, from day one, begin to rebuild as long as you begin to do those positive things. It's like I liken it to weight loss. You know, you're on a diet, you're watching what you eat, you're on a business trip, and you kind of fall off the wagon, and you're eating desserts and you're having a good time. The minute you go back to those good habits that led you to losing weight and being healthy, the good stuff will start to happen again. And that's the same thing with the FICO score. If you've had a bump in the road, if you've had a problem, the minute you begin to do those positive things again, your score will begin to start to improve.
Now, you're saying that you're looking at things like the cell phone and the cable bills and things like that. I mean, we're going to see that anytime soon, because that's what I think the biggest problem I have is that we've got this, I don't want to call it a double standard, that doesn't seem like the right word to me, but we've got, and we're definitely going to get into this conversation in a bit, we've got all these people out there talking about how you have to have a credit card for a good score, you have to do all this for a good score, blah, 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 blah. But then I know some people coming out of college whose parents paid for their college. They've never had a credit card. They've got a cash car, so what do they need credit for? But if they want to get a home, they don't have a credit score, and now they're being told, well, you have to take out a credit card, you have to borrow money. when will FICO be able to evaluate that type of person equally with someone who does handle
it? And that's absolutely valid. I mean, the world is changing. You do see, we see in our data, a lot of millennials who are not engaging in credit the way their parents did. They're not opening credit cards. They're living a cash-based life. They're using prepaid cards or they're using debit cards.
Thank God.
And so we recognize that we need to figure out a way to evaluate those consumers in a responsible way so that lenders can look at that data and make a responsible decision for that consumer when they're ready to take on a loan of some kind, whether it's for a mortgage or a car or something like that. And it's important to remember, because of regulations here in the United States, particularly the Fair Credit Reporting Act and things like that, when you look at data that's used to make a credit decision, there are a couple of criteria that are important. The data needs to be broadly available, and so that means it needs to be reported and tracked in a way that is broad and accessible. It needs to be data that a consumer can correct if it's incorrect, you know, that there's a mechanism if there's incorrect data about them that they can, you know, access that data and be able to correct that mistake if that's possible. And then ultimately, it has to be proven to be a predictor of the ability to repay a debt. And that's that last piece is where FICO comes into play. We can analyze and research and evaluate that kind of data and be able to say to the marketplace, yes, retail data is a predictor of someone's likelihood to repay a debt. Yes, utility bill payment is a predictor of somebody's likelihood to repay a debt. And so that's what we're undergoing right now. That's what we're undertaking rather right now, is that kind of evaluation and looking at the kinds of data that you talk about that are not traditionally available in a credit report that could very well be a predictor of someone's likelihood to repay debt. It logically makes sense that if I'm paying my mobile phone bill every month, that I'm probably a responsible guy. But you also need to look at that data in the context of other types of data and not in a vacuum by itself, because I may be in a situation where it's critical that I pay my mobile phone bill and I'll do that above everything else, but I'm letting other bills go past due or something like that. And so it's not a really simple black and white, yes, no, in or out kind of thing. It requires a deeper and broader analysis, which is what we're undertaking right now. And I think we'll be in a position to talk about that type of data sometime in 2015 about the predictability of it and being able to build a credit score that brings that type of data into the mix.
And if we go back to what you were saying at the beginning of our conversation, is that the data that's coming into FICO is all voluntary. And for the most part, there is nothing that isn't a debt or debt product going in unless it's bad debt. So we need to get cell phone companies to report their data? I mean, what's
exactly
the incentive for them?
Exactly. And that's the deal, is that, as I mentioned, the data has to be reported, the data has to be broad, the data has to be deep. Rental data is a perfect example. Rental data is very inconsistently reported across the country. And so you can't evaluate it because there's not enough of it, or it's not deep enough, or it doesn't go back far enough to be able to really analyze it. And so we need to encourage landlords of all sizes, large corporate landlords as well as mom-and-pop landlords, or we need to create a system for them to easily report this information so that the database exists that we can evaluate and make decisions on.
That's probably the hardest thing, I think, is getting the landlord who's renting out the second story to somebody.
Absolutely.
What's their incentive to
send their information? What's in it for them? Yeah. Well, it's ultimately what was in it for credit card lenders back in the day when there weren't a lot of credit card clients.
Right.
It's about feeding into a database that provides information that makes it easier for them to evaluate future customers. So if you can make the value proposition to a landlord today that by feeding into this database, he or she will be able to better evaluate a tenant down the road, that's the value prop for them.
Agreed.
Yeah. Not easily done. Absolutely not easily done.
We referred to the Fair Credit Reporting Act. We talked about Experian and TransUnion. Okay, now lenders, they actually have their hands tied when it comes to approving loans. I'm going to come to bat here for you because there are the laws that say that there can't be any unbiased information in there, you know, the whole race, age, sex. None of that. So I understand that there's that barrier for lenders to evaluate people on specific data that isn't, what am I trying to say here? I apologize for not having the words, but the credit Equal Credit Opportunity Act requires that lenders evaluate everyone equally so as not to appear biased or prejudiced.
Absolutely.
So, now, do you see FICO as that solution for the lenders?
It is part of the solution. I mean, the beauty of the FICO score when it was created 25 years ago is that it democratized credit. If you think about 25 years ago, credit decisions were made because I knew the banker, I was friends with the banker, I looked like the banker, and so that's why the banker decided to lend me money. And what the FICO score was able to do was to level that playing field and say those kinds of arbitrary things that really don't matter about my ability to repay a debt, those kinds of arbitrary things should not be factored into making these kinds of decisions. And so the FICO score was useful in that democratization of credit in terms of making credit decisions colorblind, sex blind, you know, all of those factors, those arbitrary factors, taking those out of the mix so that a lot more people could access credit than had been able to access credit before.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to see it eventually level out a bit, but I don't think it'll ever be
that
completely.
So that speaks there is, because of the changing economics today, there's a need to continue that effort to democratize credit because there are lots of people that are outside of that traditional credit box today that are not utilizing those traditional credit products. And so the industry overall has to adapt to that. And the FICO score is certainly part of that, but lenders need to look at potential customers differently, and the whole world has to look at things differently because people are using credit or not using credit in a different way than their parents used credit.
You know, I think it's interesting that we wrote the laws to eliminate age and sex and all that from being evaluated, but don't you think, well, this is an opinion I'm asking for you.
Sure.
I know you're speaking in name for FICO, but do you think that age has something to do with it? With the ability, I mean, if you got somebody just out of college and he's trying to get a house, doesn't that somehow play into the whole thing? Or do you think the history?
I wouldn't necessarily go with age, but history, you know, someone who doesn't have history managing credit perhaps should be looked at differently from someone that does have history managing credit. But I'm sure you know as well as I know lots of people who are quote-unquote older and mature who are not good at managing credit, as well as 20-year-olds who are incredibly good about managing credit and managing debt. So you can't make a judgment based solely on age, but I do think experience does count for something. How long you've been managing credit does count for something.
Well, I think how you manage money in general is what it should be about.
Yeah.
But I can see where
absolutely.
The,
and looking at other indicators of your ability to manage money successfully. Up until now, we've only had the traditional things, but I think there are so many new... I mean, debit cards didn't exist 10 years ago. You know, prepaid cards didn't exist 5 years ago. So there are lots of products that are in the marketplace to now that are in the marketplace now that didn't exist. And so the market has to catch up with what do those mean and how should we evaluate them and how should they fit into the mix.
And speaking of the market, and more specifically with the media, what do you wish the media would promote or explain better about FICO and the credit scoring system?
I think the number one thing is that it isn't this mysterious black box that... The score is actually a reflection of you and that you have control over the score. And the three basic things I said earlier, that if you pay your bills on time every single time, if you keep your credit card balances below 30% of your available credit, and if you only open new credit when you need to, that those are the keys to success. Those are the keys to a good FICO score. And I think also that if you stumble, because we all stumble, and I can tell you stories from when I was younger, we all make mistakes, that a mistake doesn't condemn you to bad credit hell, that you can rise from the ashes and you can rebuild and you can come back, and that you shouldn't think, okay, I've made some mistakes, I'm doomed, I'm never going to be able to get credit again. That's absolutely not true.
I'm not going to let you get by with one thing you said. Maybe it was just because you were in the heat of it, but to be successful, it doesn't require a credit score. So,
no, that's fair. You're absolutely true. There are a lot of people that are living just fine without a credit score or credit. I admire them.
Now, I do believe an educated consumer is a better consumer. I also believe that the information being taught by financial experts and the media is incomplete. And maybe we talked a little bit about this already, but do you believe FICO could be doing more to educate Americans about the dangers of debt and overuse of credit, even though the market and the media isn't asking for it?
You know, we've been educating consumers about good credit management for 10 years with MyFICO.com. What we could probably do a better job of is promoting that MyFICO.com is out there. There is a ton of information there, all of it free, that helps you manage your credit, manage your finances better. And one of the reasons I joined the company was to help promote that. And one of the reasons I do this kind of thing, come to FinCon and have these conversations, is to try to get the word out there that MyFICO.com exists. There's a ton of information on MyFICO.com for free on how to manage your credit well. There's an active peer-to-peer forum where people can ask advice of other people for free to understand credit issues, nuances, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, the information has been out there, but what we need to do a better job is letting people know the information is out there.
In the forum, do you have an answer on there for how to obtain the perfect FICO score? All right, I need to interject here because what you just heard was a bit of silence. I asked him the question, is the perfect FICO score on the FAQs? He laughed, and then he looked at me with these big eyes. And I couldn't tell if it was a don't go there question, or if he didn't know, or if he couldn't answer, but it was very unusual, so I needed to interject here because the conversation stopped, and I'm not sure what was going on there, so I moved on to the next question. So let me back it up here again, and I'll play it for you. In the forum, do you have an answer on there for how to obtain the perfect FICO score? Okay, let me move on to the next question. All right, and this will be the last question because there are some changes coming. I think we mentioned earlier, but when FICO begins to include non-debt and other alternative payments in their main credit scoring model, when will this happen? You say this is going to be 2015, or is it coming soon?
I think we will have some interesting things to talk about, including non-traditional credit data in 2015. When it gets adopted by the market and widely used by the market is hard to say because obviously there are a lot of forces that are in play. But absolutely, we'll be talking about this issue around what other kinds of information will help lenders make decisions about consumers who choose not to use traditional credit products. We'll definitely be talking about that in 2015.
So at FinCon 15, when we have that in, I don't know, San Antonio, then you and I are going to get back together and we're going to talk about the good old days.
You got it. I will. The good old days.
And we'll see what kind of big changes we have here.
You got it.
Anthony Sprav, Director of Public Relations at FICO, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming on the Money Planet SOS podcast and being honest and open to us about our questions about this.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
I want to go back and summarize a couple of the things that we went through today, just so you're clear on my stance on this FICO thing. I don't want to sound like a FICO fanboy, because I'm not. But when I'm not, and even though sometimes I think I might put myself out there, I'm not saying that I'm a FICO hater. I understand that FICO, they didn't start the fire. They were out there collecting data on people's behaviors as far as paying debts and things like that. And they served a need, which is for the bankers who needed to have a fair, balanced approach on how to evaluate somebody's likeliness to pay back a debt. And that is what FICO's doing. What I don't like is that our culture, and it's not just FICO. FICO's not the biggest name out there pushing this stuff. If I said Susie Orman, what do you think? You think credit score, ding. You know, I've never heard that from a FICO rep or even in a FICO article. Not that I've read a bunch, but to be honest, I'm seeing all this stuff from financial bloggers, financial experts like Susie Orman, and even those like Dave Ramsey who speak against the FICO score. So it's not necessarily FICO that I'm against, but it is against the culture who stands behind what FICO's doing as being the only way, the only thing you need to focus on, that it's so mandatory that you're going to tell somebody who has no debt and no credit with no problems that they need to go out and get a credit card. That's what I have a problem with. You need to go out and build your credit, son. No. Why don't you focus on what you need to do? Don't worry about the credit score, because there's alternatives out there. And that's the other thing. Nobody's talking about the alternatives. The alternatives are out there. The biggest name and the one I can get behind is eCredible. They become the middleman to manual underwriting. It's a practice the bankers used to have. But again, manual underwriting was an expensive process and they were looking for something cheaper. And of course, they wanted to have something they could say was pretty much foolproof as far as saying, well, we're not looking at sex, we're not looking at age, we're not looking at all that stuff. So knowing that that is there, that you can use that, is going to be able to let us debt freedom fighters to live a debt-free lifestyle, that we don't need credit cards, that we don't need to borrow money on a car, and we don't need to carry a balance to have a good FICO score, because that's some of the advice that's out there. This allows us to focus on what's important, which is buying the things that we want with the money we have to avoid paying interest and to afford us the freedom to live the way we want. We no longer have to work a second job to make the Volvo payment. It's freedom in the truest sense that we aren't beholden to anybody to work. 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. You know what? Most Americans make enough money to pay for the necessities in life. It's the things that we throw on top. The nice cars, the iPhones, and the other, the big TVs and the big couch and all the comforts that we love and we enjoy and appreciate. It's those things we throw on top that trap us into debt. And then we start charging our meal out at dinner on a credit card and start paying interest on the balance. It's ridiculous, isn't it, when you think about it that way? I'm encouraged that FICO's making the attempt to add more things to the calculation that they have on how to evaluate someone's creditworthiness. I don't see how 100% of the information is going to make it into their credit evaluation, but you know what? There's already alternatives out there, so I'm not worried about it. My wife and I started this journey in 2006. We were debt-free in 2007. We have been living on our income and less than what we make since then because we got out of debt, because that new outfit or that meal at Applebee's continues to haunt us in the form of a monthly credit card payment. And I'm not bragging. What I'm saying is that it took us a couple of years to get out of debt. And since then, we have lived without the fear that we don't have a good credit score. Who cares what your credit score is when you're not borrowing more money? If you're not borrowing more money, then you don't have to worry about it. And And the only time that you would have to worry about your credit score is when you're not making your payments. And that's a different problem. Not making your payments is a much bigger problem in your life than what it does to your credit score. So focus on yourself, your family, your wealth, what you're doing with the money. Make purposeful purchases and pay attention so you're not paying interest. So circling back to the interview with Anthony Sprav, I want to thank Anthony for coming on the show. That was wonderful. I am interested to see what happens when they change their algorithms in the future and start collecting all this extra data. But then again, that's not really what's going to matter anyway. What's going to matter is changing the mindset of America to make them understand that FICO scores don't pay the bills. Credit scores don't give you money. Your TransUnion report does not reduce the balances on the things that you owe money on. And this certainly that a credit score does not increase your income. Those are the things that you can do when you pay attention and not interest. The main content of this episode is over. I've got a couple more things I want to give you, but if you need to go, hey, I certainly understand. I appreciate you listening this far. I've got a really cool app that will help you to collect payments on your phone. Credit and debit card, you can accept those payments on your phone really easily. I've got some recent appearances I want to make a mention of where I've been on different shows. And then finally, I want to, of course, thank a couple of folks for leaving 5-star reviews on iTunes. So first, let me get into this app. The first thing I want to talk about here is this thing called Flint. It's an app that allows you to take credit and debit card payments on your iPhone or your Android device. Now, it does not require a dongle. You've seen things like Square, which I think is really cool. Industry changer. I'm surprised it's not been adopted more than it already has. There's other things like PayPal has their own, but this one, you don't need that thing to stick on your phone. You install the app on your device, you set up the account, you tie it to a bank account, and it didn't take me very long to be able to start accepting and collecting on payments. You get the money right away, but here's the best part. This is what really I think is the selling point for me why I like this. I've always been talking about how credit cards charge a higher swipe fee than debit cards. That's one of the reasons why credit cards are against my religion. It saps more money out of the economy and puts it into the hands of banks who are filling your mailboxes with pre-approved credit card offers. Well, here's what's really cool. Without you having to do anything, once you take a picture of the credit or debit card, which really helps to quickly take the payment on your phone, it knows if it's a credit card or it knows if it's a debit card, and it will charge you a different fee for processing. The credit card transactions, Flint will charge 2.95%, which I think is a little bit more than PayPal and Square. But if it's a debit card, it only charges 1.95%. So if you have somebody who's on the fence about paying now or if they want to pay with a debit or credit card, they're not sure which one, you can do this. You can offer them a discount to pay with their debit card. It's good for you because it's less fees coming out of your account, and it's good for them because they're paying the bill. They're not going to have another debt on their credit card they have to pay next month or over a period of time and get charged interest. So let's use the example of $1,000. If you run a $1,000 charge through Flint, then it's going to cost you $29.50. That's gone. It doesn't go to you. It doesn't go to your bank. It goes to the bank out in the East Coast or wherever the Visa MasterCard is. They get the money. But what you can do is offer a discount to your customer. Say, look, I'll give you a couple of bucks off if you pay with a debit card today. They might actually appreciate that. And then again, it's good for them in two ways. One, it's less money out of their pocket. And two, they don't have any debt because they pay with a debit card with money they already have. So I like it for that reason. And of course, I like it the fact that, you know, it's only 2% going to a credit card company and not 3%. You can find more information about Flint and even watch a short little video about how it works at flint.com, F-L-I-N-T.com. Available only to iOS and Android users in the United States. I had a couple of appearances this last week, which it just blows my mind every time somebody wants me on their show. Podcast Junkies with Harry Duran. You can find that at podcastjunkies.com, or I'll have a link in the show notes at moneyplanetsos.com/164. We talked a lot about Twitter strategies, and we spent a lot of time talking about good old-fashioned vinyl records. It really didn't have as much to do about podcasting as you would think for a show called Podcast Junkies, but it was a lot of fun. And then the Podcasters Roundtable, I was on it again. This is the third time I've been on that show. It's episode 35 with Ray Ortega, Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting, Daniel J. Lewis from the Audacity Podcast, Lou Mangiello from WDW Radio, which is Walt Disney World Radio Podcast. The Podcasters Roundtable is supposed to be debates and discussions on topics about podcasting, but we talked about iTunes, and there wasn't too much disagreement or discussion there, but we did cover some good topics there. So if you're interested, you can go to I'll put a link in the show notes at moneyplanetsos.com/164. And the reason for that is right now the only thing that's available is the video, because it takes a few days for Ray Ortega to get to where he can rip the audio out of the Google Hangout and then put it out as a podcast episode. Hey, before we shut this thing down, I need to say a couple of quick thank yous to people who left 5-star reviews for the show in iTunes. First, From a Buick 8 says, I now have a plan. He's debt-free. He's been debt-free for over a year now. That's awesome. Also, NJD680 says, engaging, motivating, and informative. And then the best one that I've received, just got this just yesterday, EMDZHA says, excellent Dave Ramsey alternative. And if you read what this person wrote, you're going to see why I'm blown away. So I'll put it in the show notes at moneyplansos.com/164. If you found this episode informative and encouraging, please leave a review through the show in iTunes. Or if you're an Android user or you're a Stitcher user, hey, I haven't forgotten about you. Please give the show a thumbs up on your smartphone and leave a review on Stitcher. And in the meantime, focus on what's important to you and not a silly credit score. God bless. Have a great week. All right, as promised, I'm going to pull the name for the winner of Tom Corley's Rich Kids book that I'm giving away. By the way, Tom Corley's going to be featured in the November issue of Success Magazine. Isn't that cool? So here we go. I'm going to click the button, and the winner is... it's Chris Pilon. I actually know Chris. He's from the Dadrenaline podcast, which you can also find at dadrenaline.com. He actually interviewed me, and that interview should be coming out very shortly. But Chris, man, congratulations. And I'll tell you what, I know you're an avid listener, so I am not going to let you know about the winning. I'm going to wait for you to contact me and send me your personal information on where I can send the book to you. Hey, if you know who Chris is, don't tell him you won. Don't give him the secret. I want to see how many days go by before he contacts me for the book. Well, there is one person that could actually spoil it, and it'll be okay if she did, because if you're listening, Mary, you can tell your husband that he won the book, okay? Because, Mary, you're adorbs. Love you, girl. Hey, take care, everybody. Thank you for sticking around to the very end. God bless you. Have a great week.